Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sarah Zorn, the food editor at Northside Media, which produces the annual Taste Talks Festival in both Brooklyn and Chicago. Picking up where the festival left off, the Taste Talks podcast brings innovators from various fields, including music, art, media, design, and tech, together with luminaries from the food and restaurant world to expound on any and all topics related to taste. During today's show, we'll be getting tips on throwing fabulous events and parties from Ellen Swandiak, founder of the lifestyle magazine Hobnob, as well as Christopher Buckley, owner of the Brooklyn Bar's Hanson Dry and Branch office. We'll also be spotlighting some of our favorite nationwide restaurants, putting a special emphasis on wild game. Seem random? Don't worry, you'll understand why later. But first, I'll be joined in the studio by Jacqueline Raposo, a fantastic freelance chef and food culture writer who's got the skinny on some culinary bashes that you're going to want to get tickets for now. Hey there, Jacqueline.
Hi, Sarah.
You got your party hat on, girl?
I do,
or should I say your party headphones?
My party headphones
rocking.
That
this is radio. So actually, you know, sitting here in the studio, peering out at all these people in Roberta's eating pizza and drinking Bloody Marys in the middle of the day, I kind of feel like the designated driver at some party. Oh, one of those Bloody Marys. So anyway, if anyone knows how to throw down and get down, it's the food industry. And spring, summer, and early fall are high season for festivals throughout the U.S., including, incidentally, Taste Talks in September. But what other fun food festivals do you think our listeners might be interested in?
We are coming into a great season for food festivals around the country. I'm particularly excited by a couple that mix art and food and music. It's sort of like food festivals are, you know, the gigantic concert spreads of old. So one coming up in the beginning of June is Create in Boston. It's on June 7th. And I particularly love that one because it does have a very sort of activist presence to it. It's not just famous chefs. It's not just famous, you know, musicians and artists. So that's going to be a really great one. It's pretty small. It's pretty contained. It's run by Chef Louis DiPicari. And so that's just a really great one if you want a festival scene that's not going to be insane, that's not going to be sort of spread out, and it's not going to be too overwhelming. That's a particularly fun one coming up.
I like it because food festivals, man, they're not all created
equal. No, they can be pretty scary.
Yeah, so good. Oh, Boston. That's an exciting one. And there are also, I mean, speaking of food and music festivals, I know that there's one coming up in Nashville.
Yes.
Music City Food and Wine Festival on September 19th and 20th. So obviously Nashville is Music City. I'm sure they're going to have a pretty impressive lineup, but they're going to have some pretty amazing chefs as well. I think Sean Brock is going to be there, Tim Love, Marcus Samuelson, who's certainly making the festival circuit, Jonathan Waxman.
Yeah, I think knowing he's like heading it off means there's going to be some really good food there.
Yes, he is quality. There's going to be a live musical performance by Kings of Leon as well in Nashville. Although I would imagine, I mean, that's heart of country music. So
yeah.
I'm excited to see who else is going to be bringing it. What else do you have on your radar?
One that I'm really sorry to be missing is Bottle Rock in Napa, because who wouldn't want to be in Napa?
I want to be
at the end of May. And that one, I mean, it is pretty big. There's, you know, we've got a couple New York chefs there. We've got Sarah Simmons from Birds and Bubbles and Mark Forgione and Iron Chef Morimoto, who's a goofball in person. So
yes, he is.
I'm curious to see, you
he doesn't
know,
like to do
there.
Live interviews because he doesn't feel super confident in his grasp on English. But dude, you can understand what he's saying, and it's always funny.
He's so animated, and he's game for sort of anything. So that'll be really fun. But also the music, I'm really jealous because I want to see Snoop Dogg, and I want to see, like, Michael Franti. I love Michael Franti. He's going to be there. People are going to be drinking really good wine.
Why can't you go?
Because it's Napa. It's so far away.
Girl, we're going to Napa.
I know. We should go to Napa.
I'll find somebody else to host the show
exactly.
in the meantime.
Exactly. We'll skip off for a week. Yeah, there's just going to be so much food and so much beer, and I hope it's going to be run really well. There's just a lot of stuff happening at that one, and it's in Napa, so how bad could it be?
Of course. Well, speaking of Marcus Samuelson, did you make it to the very first Harlem Eat Up this last weekend?
I did. I live up on the northern border of Harlem, so it was actually a really easy trip for me, and I was really impressed. I was going in a little bit skeptical, even though I'd been promised that the flow of traffic was going to be good and that they were going to have enough food. People were worried, about outside famous chefs coming up to Harlem. Why can't our chefs shine? But the grand tasting on Saturday really was that. Like, it was all Harlem restaurants, and there was a lot of food, and there was a lot of alcohol, and there weren't too many people, and everybody was excited. There was a lot of music playing. And, like, they did have the famous chefs coming in. There were a lot of the culinary demos that were the bigger names. A lot of Marcus's chef friends were coming in. So that was great for people, but it was also really about Harlem. I discovered a lot of restaurants I'm excited about.
Harlem is hot, hot, hot.
Very hot.
It was due for its very own festival. Well, we are going to take a little break, drink some water, not unfortunately Bloody Marys, and come back with Hobnobs, Ellen Swandiak, and Branch Offices, Christopher Buckley. You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
This one's called Quick by Dreams. This is Taste Talks. We'll be right back. The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Our two guests today know everything about what it takes to be the perfect host and event planner. So if your idea of a hot party still involves six-packs and solo cups, you are going to want to take notes. Ellen Swandiak is the founder of Hobnob, a monthly magazine and weekly blog, which takes current trends in the culinary and design worlds and incorporates them into themed party plans for at-home hosts and hostesses, complete with decor, fashion, recipe, playlist, and invitation ideas. Christopher Buckley is a 15-year-old vet in the bar industry who opened Clinton Hills Hands and Dry in 2011 and Branch Office in 2015 with hopes of filling a void he saw for a locals bar on the south side of Crown Heights. Welcome, both of you, and let's get this party started.
Hey.
Thank you for being here. So, Ellen, I've got to say, when I think magazine party planning tips, I kind of think Ladies Home Journal circa 1953 with tablescapes and jello molds, which is so not Hobnob, which is super cool and great looking, by the way. But
thank you.
Since our listeners haven't necessarily seen the magazine yet, can you talk about how you have reimagined party planning for a hipper, not necessarily younger, but infinitely more design and trend-focused audience?
Well, basically, it started because I love hosting parties myself. And I've been in the culinary and design worlds my whole life. And so basically, I just took everything that I knew and to streamline the process for people, created party-friendly recipes for that anybody can do. So basically, I go out to restaurants and look at the different trends and then translate that into party-friendly recipes. So they're one bite, you don't need utensils, the ingredients are really fresh, And they're easy to make and easy to impress people with.
So at Hobnob, each issue centers around a theme. You mm-hmm. recently had a miniature theme. This month is wild.
Yes.
This summer is stripes. How do you come up with the themes, first of all? And how do you work with chefs and mixologists and DJs and designers to help you realize those themes?
Well, the wild theme came out of more of a seasonal thing because now all the forage ingredients are in the markets, and you want to have, you know, ideas, cool ideas to do. What am I going to do with fiddleheads? What am I going to do with chanterelles? So I'm giving you, in this month's issue, there's a foraged pizza. And it's really simple to make. You just get puff pastry dough, get really nice cheeses from your local market, and then saute the fiddleheads, and you have an amazing pizza that people go, wow, over.
So what can we expect from the upcoming issue, Stripes, which I believe Christopher was actually a part of?
That's right. Stripes is about celebrating summer, and Stripes is such a beautiful, easy pattern to work with. So we're going to be doing, it's going to be more about plating the food in striped fashion. And also the decor would be striped tablecloths. And the cocktail that we're using is from Branch Office. And it's going to be a light cava.
Lemon juice.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Christopher.
So perfect for summer.
Yeah, who doesn't love bubbly, you know?
Yeah, I will take it in any fashion. Christopher, I would imagine that owning a bar is 100% like hosting a party, except that you need to do it night after night after night. And there's definitely more to it than just gathering people in a room and throwing booze at them. So when it comes to your two bars, how have you used decor and drinks and food and music to create an atmosphere that makes people just want to hang out and let loose?
We sort of embrace at both places the concept that less is more. We just try to provide a really simple, very clean space that everybody feels comfortable and unjudged in. Hanson Dry, we built so that everyone walking in, like a fellow would feel like he was wearing a jacket and a girl would feel like she was carrying a clutch, regardless of what else they were wearing. And Branch Office is a little simpler, a little bit more casual than that. It's a much larger space, but we try to just use really simple colors, very clean lines, and try to just essentially create a palette for other people to have a great time on. You know, everyone can sort of paint their own night.
So you tended bar for many years at awesome places like Franklin Park and Crown Heights, but Hanson Dry was the first establishment you actually owned. So what did you learn from other bars that you worked at or frequented about what to do, what not to do, what worked, what didn't work, that you took into consideration when opening your own place?
It's funny that you should say that, actually. I kept a notebook for a lot of years, and every place that I worked, I would try to observe how people, ownership especially, and other bartenders, how they tended the bar. I mean, I know it sounds kind of simplistic, but a bar or any business, anything in the hospitality industry really is like a plant, you know? You need to give it attention, you need to give it water, you need to give it sunlight, you need to make people feel welcome. You need to make people feel appreciated. You need to listen to their stories. You need to allow them to tell their stories. I think that the most important lessons that I learned were that there's a very, very easy way to cut people off.
Okay.
Not everybody wants to hear it, but you just put a glass of water in front of them and you just say, look, you know, you can come back tomorrow, but you can't be here today anymore. And the crux of that, like that very, very simple thing, just examining people from a human standpoint and looking at them and just being like, look, like you're the reason that we're here. You know, everyone is the reason, like everyone who's in the place is the reason that there's a place at all. And that the reason that, you know, we have the opportunity to connect. So I think that I got pretty far afield on that.
I just
really, you know, I love people, and I think a lot of business owners get really caught up and lose sight of the fact that it really is about people. You know, really, like, you want people who are going to connect, and you want to create something that has its own life.
I would like to talk about square footage for a second, which is a particular concern of city dwellers and business owners who, more often than not, don't have a lot of room to groove. So when it comes to either throwing parties or plotting out a bar or restaurant, how do you make small spaces work for you and not against you?
I think small spaces enhance mingling. I love small spaces. I think when you have a party in a huge space that you sort of lose the connections. When people are bumping into each other and listening to each other's conversations, that's the best way to get a party going. So I always over-invite people. I have a one-bedroom apartment. I've had 100 people in my apartment.
What?
In the winter. I mean, at least.
All right. Yeah. I want to know how you did it.
And the other ways of working with space is I really believe when you set up a buffet for your food that you need to do layers. So you need to have things that are higher and lower so you can put things underneath and raise so that you get more on the table instead of just have everything on one surface.
It's like interior decorating. You stick everything on your wall instead of taking up floor space. Christopher, do you have any tips for... I mean, you're pretty lucky because Branch Office has an insane backyard, but that's not always the case for bars and restaurants in New York City. So what could you do to really maximize square footage?
I think that it's... In New York City especially, I think people really like feeling that they're having an intimate moment. So I think that, you know, in order to maximize space, we really try to give people zones so that, you know, like there's stools at the bar and then there's a standing zone behind that and there's tables behind that. And you try to keep that pretty tight so that people don't feel like they're swimming around in the space, because people do want to get, you know, they want to get up on top of each other. They want, you know, they want to feel like there's something going on. You know, like if you put five people in a bar, five more people will walk in. So if you keep it kind of close in the front, then you'll, I think, have a better time.
Hmm. And well, budget is also a big concern for most people, whether we're talking about a one-off party or running a 7-day-a-week bar. There are tons of costs to consider. There's food and drinks and decor and dishware. So do you guys have any money-saving tips, thoughts on where it makes sense to splurge, and how you could cut a few corners to curtail your expenses somewhat?
Well, I usually try to get really stellar ingredients, but let's say you buy like crab salad and it costs $15 for a tiny container, but then if you put in radishes and whatever and maximize that and put it out on a small tiny bit on little crackers or little vessels of some sort, then you can stretch that $15 into something amazing. And that's what I like to do, it like that.
Smart.
But spend a lot of money on one thing and then sort of stretch it out as much as you can.
Yeah,
stretch,
I think quality ingredients are definitely the key. Like, don't save any money on getting really, really good stuff.
Yeah, your lime juice.
Yeah.
Fresh juice.
Yeah, it's got to be fresh. You know, it's a little bit more expensive, but it's better, and people have a better time with it. It's tough to save money in the bar industry.
Is there no place that you could cut corners? Can't you buy cheapo napkins? Or when do people start to revolt?
Well, it depends on the kind of place, and it depends on the neighborhood. You know, people... Humans in New York are very fickle, but they're also very understanding. They're very, you know, they're interested in getting what they'd like. You know, I don't think that there's, you know, obviously you have to have cocktail napkins, you have to have straws, you have to, you know, clean your ice maker, you have to, you know, maintain your...
Come on, no, you
no,
don't.
No, you really do, you really do. It's funny, every guy that I know who cleans ice machines, they never drink anything with ice in it. It's crazy.
Oh, no. That's the scariest thing I've heard in a while.
Yeah, right. No, you gotta have them in there every other month. No, it's, you know, you can't really, you have to give to get.
It's so funny because you mentioned how diplomatic you have to be putting water in front of a drunk guest. And I think that actually both of you could speak to this. How does one diplomatically and discreetly get rid of a drunk or otherwise disorderly guest while keeping them as a potential friend or customer? This is something to think about when it comes to parties, too. How do you get rid of the friend that is about to knock over your antique urn that your grandma gave you that's on the mantelpiece?
I think it's about separation. You kind of have to pull the person out of the crowd, like get them out of the energy of the moment, and then just like take them to a quieter spot and just be like, okay, you know, let's. And then I think pretty much people do realize it, that they're causing problems, and they maybe are a little bit embarrassed at that point. So they either settle down or they usually leave at that point.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. If you cut them out of the herd, you talk to them like a human being, you talk to them like a person, you try to be as understanding as possible.
Yeah.
You say, listen, you know, I'm interested in everyone having a good time. Right now, you're about to not have a good time, and everyone else is about to not have a good time, whether you're going to fall over, you know, you're talking to somebody you shouldn't talk to. It's just, you really have to...
But respectfully you have to
listen to them. You have to, you know, identify that they are human and that you are sympathetic to whatever they're going through. And then, you know, most of the time it works, and sometimes it's just, you know, like you don't ever have to match people's energy. You know, like when someone gets very upset and they begin getting angrier, like it doesn't help anything to match that by escalating yourself. You just need to remain very, very calm. Just be like, look, this is the voice of reason. I don't think that you're a bad person. I don't think that you know, don't deserve anything. I don't, you know, whatever it is that's going on in your head, I just think you can't be here anymore.
Or you could give them the card for somebody else's bar down the street. Yeah. That take care of the problem.
But I think it's important to listen to them, because the reason that sometimes people are acting out is because something went wrong or whatever happened. And I
think more often than not,
just by telling their story, it calms them down. Like, I've had weekend parties at, you know, weekend houses where people were fighting, and I'm like, now we have to spend the whole weekend together.
Oh my God. And then quick solve, don't go away for the weekend with anybody. Jacqueline, we could still go to, Napa together. But let's talk a bit about stocking the perfect home at home bar. What are some essential spirits and mixers and equipment to keep on hand during each particular season? I would imagine you want to rotate it out. You're not going to have, you know, Campari in the fall and, you know, whatever, Jägermeister ever. So talk about how you stock the perfect at-home bar.
I think if you just start with, it's funny, actually, I just finished reading a book called The 12-Bottle Bar, and it's about just that particular thing. I think, you know, it's based on your own taste, so, you know, don't bother buying scotch if you're not, you know, going to drink it. I think high quality, you know, start with call brands and above, you know, so like, don't stock your home bar with Svedka, you know, start with Stoli or Kettle, like, because it's something that you're going to be drinking, so you want to take care of yourself. Basically, one vodka, one gin, one whiskey, an Amaro of some variety, and then, you know, depending on your taste, you know, if you like to drink Manhattans, then I think every home bar should have bitters. You know, you should at least have Angostura, if it's important to you. To, you know, to drink Manhattans or, you know, old fashions, and take care of yourself, you know, like get good stuff. It's like, it's your home, and you know, you're if you're going to be hosting people or you're going to be having a party, like, get nice stuff that's going to make you feel really nice.
So, Ellen, the truth is that a lot of most of us don't have the finances to throw off, you know, to give big parties every month. So are there any tips or takeaways in your magazine that people could use to just add a touch of style or panache to their own everyday lives?
Definitely. I think each party we have set up is sort of, it's a fantasy. It's about following a theme, and this would be the ideal situation. These are the parties I like to throw because I like to have hundreds of people, and I do two or three a year usually. And but that being said, if you just look through the magazine every week, you would just get ideas. Like, if you're just having people coming over for a bite and then you were going to go out to dinner, like, maybe you put out just like a one bite thing and make a special cocktail for you just to get together before you go out into the public. So that's what I would say. There's like lots of little ideas that you can just take. So whether it's a plate or a bite or whatever it is, or the cocktail or a new spirit, because to go back to the bar, I'm very much into experimentation. So my bar always has whatever latest fantasy thing that I'm like interested in developing and what cocktails I'm developing. So there's always something new there. And that's what I think is interesting to show people new things and discover new things for them.
Well, I think the takeaway here is no Spetka ever. Well, I feel especially excited and equipped for summer party season now. So thank you to both of you for your insight and your tips.
Sure.
You are listening to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio Network. We had a little bit of a technical. I think that they sent all of our Bloody Marys into the recording studio. Guys, we're back as promised. I am your host, Sarah Zorn. You are listening to Taste Talks and Heritage Radio Network. Jacqueline is joining me again to talk about wonderful, wild, exotic game at restaurants throughout the U.S. Jacqueline, are you into ostrich and elk and venison and whatnot? And if so, where do you find it?
Well, a great way to sort of start out if you're trying to get into wild game is to go to like the classic steakhouse that will serve it. So one out in Malibu, which I think we might need to take a drive down the coast on the way back from Napa and stop in Malibu, is the Saddle Peak Lodge. And it's this gigantic, huge sort of could seem like a big boxy sort of kitschy restaurant. It's got, you know, heads on the walls and it's got wagon wheels and all that kind of stuff. But it's legitimately been around for a very, very long time. And there you can get boar and venison and elk and bison and buffalo and kangaroo. So that's sort of, you know, if you want a steak, if you want a burger, that's a great place to sort of stop out on the West Coast. But there's a bunch more around the country. And of course, we've got a couple decent samplings in New York City where they sort of kick it up a tiny little bit. Gentleman Farmer down on Rivington Street has a little bit more of like a classic French preparation on things like ostrich and rabbit and wild boar. And there's been a rumor that they're opening a second location in Fort Greene. And I don't know if any listeners out there have any update on that. I couldn't really find any, but I'm sort of curious to see if they're encroaching into your neighborhood a little bit.
I don't know. When I think about wild game in Brooklyn, actually, I think, of course, of Henry's End, which is an oldie but goodie in Brooklyn Heights. And they do a wild game festival every fall, which is pretty intense. I mean, they have antelope and they have turtle. And we're not in fall yet, but they actually make a point of keeping something wild on the menu all year through. So I don't know. You're going to want to have to take a look at their website, but the last time I checked, they had ostrich pot stickers, they had buffalo flank steak and pappardelle with venison bolognese. So it's pretty hardcore. You don't need to travel, you know, to the middle of the country to get your hands on some wild game. Although I have to, you know, people who are just taking baby steps into the world of wild game, I don't know about you, I would definitely suggest they go the burger route. Mm-hmm. There is a place called Sammy's Wild Game Grill in Houston that just does burgers, except they're made out of everything from venison and elk and antelope to yak and pheasant and ostrich. I have yet to venture into Houston, but if I get there, I'm in search of a yak burger.
Yeah, I want somebody to report back on what a yak tastes like.
I think that's a smart route to go with wild game. It's like edible training wheels. If you're not ready for the ribs, just go for the burger. So I'm going to throw it out to our guests. Christopher, Ellen, have you eaten any delicious antelope meat or turtle belly that you would like to share with the group?
Well, for the wild party, we had we sourced our ingredients from a place called Fossil Farms, which is in New Jersey, and they do a sampling of exotic sausage meat, which is rabbit, wild boar, venison, and pheasant. And it was a really simple party dish to make. You just basically grill the sausage, cut it up, and I made two mustard dips to go with it. So that, to me, was also an easy way to get somebody to try something they might not ordinarily try.
Cool.
And it was delicious.
Interesting. What about you, Christopher?
It's funny. I don't get out much.
The life of a bar owner.
No, it's funny. You know, it's like kind of the standby for me. I think the last time that I had anything gamey or anything wild was a couple years ago. I had a customer, a regular, brought me venison that he had killed, but on the restaurant front, I have nothing to report, unfortunately, on the wild.
All right, you're going to have to take a trip out to Houston with us. We're going to grab...
That'd be great.
When Jackie and I head to Napa, we'll make a pit stop in Houston for that.
It's on the way back. It's on the way.
Anyway, guys, that is our show for today. If you would like to keep current with party tips and trends, please check out hobnobmag.com. And be sure to visit Christopher's terrific bars, Hanson Dry and Branch Office. Obviously, he's there all the time because he never gets out. Jacqueline Raposo, just so happens to have a wonderful website, wordsfoodart.com, which is a must read. And you could follow little old me on Twitter at Sarah Zorn BK, or of course Taste Talks at Taste Talks. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed on iTunes or Stitcher as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, you've been listening to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio Network.
Program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.